Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello everyone, welcome back to the Stompcast. My goodness, it is a damp old day, but that's not going to stop us. Maybe it's a bit of ASMR actually coming off the umbrellas. That'd be lovely.
Well, I like that. I heard something the other day. This sound that's hitting off the top of the umbrella, very similar to when you're in a tent. It's called chrysalism, which I love, when you're right near the elements, but you're warm and dry. Like I get it sometimes when I'm stood under shelter or, you know, at a festival or something like that, where it's horrible weather, but you're warm and dry and you're right on the elements, or listening to a storm. Yeah.
Chrysalism,
yeah.
Wow.
You're in a chrysalis pod. Yeah, I love it.
What a lovely word. I love that. I absolutely love that. Well, honestly, Josh, it's been fantastic to have you, and I appreciate how open you've been, and you know, you've got such a warmth about you, and you're very funny as well, indeed. And I know the book is kind of that nice balance of like sharing and teaching, but giving people a laugh as well.
Oh, right. Humour's so important. Humanising. When you feel seen, and then not only seen, but then someone's laughing with you about it. Like, yeah, it's pretty rubbish, this, isn't it? like it's. Yeah. Often when I do talks and things, like, put your hand up if you had a panic attack. Some people reluctantly put their hands up. I was like, great, aren't they? You know, it's great that I highly recommend them. And they were like, what? You know, this is the worst experience of my life. I was like, yeah, but I hear you. You can do with these things. I'll use humour a lot just to make light of what could be a very horrible, horrible place to be in.
It's kind of why I think people sometimes are surprised at, like, how much like doctors and medics use humour in, you know, in the hospitals and stuff, like in A&E, and even during the pandemic. It's like, honestly, that saying of like you laugh or you cry is so true. You have to sometimes like find an outlet, and sometimes, well, I think laughter is just a natural release off the valve, isn't it? That pressure valve of stuff sometimes.
Yeah.
If you can just make someone laugh, sometimes that can just change someone's mood or just let something go almost, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And you need to, and if you look at it from a nerdy point of view, like anxiety is your sympathetic nervous system in overdrive. But when you're laughing and experiencing joy, you pull on the parasympathetic side of the nervous system, which is kind of what we're trying to aim for. And it kind of is a bit of a shock to the system. It's interesting you mentioned about hospitals. I get really scared in hospitals. And I had a procedure done a few years ago. And I asked the doctor, I said, is this going to hurt? And she said, it's going to be unfathomable pain. And just smiled at me, because it was just the joke I needed at the time.
And you're like, great, I guess we'll do it then. I'll take two.
She was like, unfathomable pain.
What a way of...
I loved it. It calmed
like
me down,
to
actually,
beyond your possible realms of imagination. Yeah. That's how bad it would be.
If you
great.
If you thought you knew pain, just
like,
wait.
Then I'll take the painkillers then, please. Good way of selling pain relief, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Unfathomable pain. What a way. Well, yes, so parasympathetic. We talked a lot about the kind of parasympathetic nervous system. I guess the thing about modern life, and this will lead us into a conversation a bit about like reducing that state of anxiety that we often seem to be living in. We live a lot in the sympathetic nervous system, don't we? When we talk about sympathetic, we're talking about like the active, busy, hustle, stress, dealing with problems, doing things. And there are obviously important parts of that sympathetic system. It's the drive that we have, right, to get stuff done. And you activate your sympathetic system, you know, when you're working, you're stressed. But also if you're having extreme exercise and so on. Although interesting, obviously, when we exercise, often that puts us into a relaxed state afterwards. But if we're in that state too much, that's when we can end up really with those jugs full, with that kind of little capacity. And what we need to do perhaps more in modern society particularly is activate the parasympathetic nervous system. And that's your kind of your wellness stuff, but not your like extreme wellness of like, again, you know, running a million miles an hour outside for hours. It can be that kind of really gentle stuff that really just slows you down. I might be lighting the candle, having the bath that you mentioned, I think you said earlier on.
Yeah.
Right? So I wonder if you could talk a little bit to that effect of like, how can we find a better balance between the two? And where does that fit in with anxiety and prevention of that anxious state?
Yes, that's a really good way. That's half my answer.
Sorry.
No, bang on. No, it's nice. Yeah, absolutely.
I was just thinking about it as I was asking. I was like, we need to find a way to find a better balance, don't we? We can't be switching this lever on all the time of sympathetic and not pulling back, can we?
Yeah, and you've got to watch out about forcing wellness. Because when you're forcing wellness, you're in a disciplined doing mode. And ironically, you still end up in the sympathetic nervous system, which is your... in sympathetic state, where it's like I'm on edge, I'm in fifth gear, I'm stressed, you know, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with being in that state, and we all need that for work and for life's chores and challenges. But to activate that parasympathetic state where we are rested, you know, enjoying things at leisure, so important to have that balance. A lot of people though feel like guilty or like they're failing or doing something for being in that state. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Some of the homework that I set for my clients in my practice is like, right, you've got to go and be lazy. I want a journal of how lazy you were. I want to see a journal of what you didn't do, you know, and because it's a skill.
This sounds like the opposite to what you think people would say. Can I just say? That's you expect your therapist to be like, right, I need to go and do this and this and this and this to like meditate for 3 hours and do this and that and the other. You're telling them to go and do nothing.
Yeah, there's a lot of misconceptions about therapy. I write about it in the book. It's like a lot of people think recovering from anxiety is how long you've been without being anxious. Like, no. Recovery from anxiety is how well you can tolerate the discomfort in the short term. You know, it's not how long it's not been there. It's not the accumulation of its absence. Mm. It's, you know what? I did this despite being anxious. I went socializing with friends despite being anxious. I went to the gig despite feeling anxious. I went to work despite, I drove. So many people have driving anxiety. I got behind the wheel despite being anxious. So for me, when I see that, I'm like, that's the homework. Because you're teaching yourself that you can tolerate discomfort, which is what will get you to anywhere in the end. But a lot of people with the perfectionistic mindsets they think that, oh, I've been all week and I haven't been anxious. I was like, okay. Well, we spoke about avoidance before. It was like, yeah, but probably because you avoided the anxious triggers.
So
I've not been anxious all week. I was like, great. I don't, you know, I'm not a sadist. I don't want you to be uncomfortable, but like, actually, you know what, Josh? Every day I put myself in something really uncomfortable today, and now I feel a bit more confident doing these things in the future. And I'm like, there, that's your progress. And that leads to longer term, less anxiety, more parasympathetic nervous system state, because you're not building your life around your fears.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And it's kind of like, imagine that thing of like, okay, I'm going to avoid anxiety, so I'm going to stay super still, not move at all, not move an inch, not go anywhere, not even blink my eyes, because anything I do might cause anxiety. And think, well, that's been really successful because I've managed to avoid anxiety completely, but you haven't done anything that you wanted to do. And that doesn't sound like living, does it?
No.
As you're saying, I'm like, that's such like a great way of explaining the avoidance stuff, because it's like, yeah, but... at what cost? Like, we can't not do anything. That's not a success. Not being anxious is not a success if you can't live your life.
That's, yeah, absolutely spot on. So if you're someone who struggles with anxiety, and I'm sure a lot of people who listen to you, Alex, do, it's like, what did I do this week despite feeling anxious? Also, that's super brave because it's literally my fear and threat response, and I chose to do that in the face of fear. Pretty cool, badass thing to do, you know. And I'm rewiring my brain, and I'm tolerating things better, and I'm realizing I was capable of more than I thought, you know. Whereas, yeah, the other person might be like, I haven't been anxious all week, but at what cost, you know, and it's okay. Don't see being anxious as a sign of failure. That's like one of my biggest things I say. Gosh. Even from a nerdy kind of...
Do you know how
of...
powerful that is as a statement? Because a lot of people will see anxiety as the enemy. And of course, we don't want to feel anxious. I get that. But by not seeing feeling anxiety as a failure, you're actually like giving yourself permission in a way to actually test that and to like push, not push through it, but go, well, actually, if it's not a failure, then let's go out and do stuff and see what happens.
Yeah, you remove the resistance as well, which is really like anxiety thrives on resistance. An old psychology trope, you know, what you resist persists. Well, yeah, it will keep going. One of my clients in the book will go on a driving anxiety exposure where we drive around Manchester while she's having a panic attack behind the wheel. And it's like, see, your brain tells you you're going to drive off the bridge or crash into everyone. But actually, you're more than capable of what you think. It just feels really horrible because of that adrenaline we were talking about before. Yes, you felt horrible all afternoon, but in a month's time when you realize, oh, I can drive to the beach now, or I can drive to see my auntie, then yeah, your anxiety has less of an impact on your life. It's not the center of your world. And that applies to things like depression as well, doing things whilst feeling depressed, just as brave, because it takes like three times the energy sometimes.
Why do you think that's important with depression? With anxiety, it's kind of like the exposure. What is the importance of doing that if you're feeling a low mood? Why? I know sometimes, you know, you do need to like, just maybe it's because you're exhausted or whatever.
Yeah.
Why is it important to kind of do things despite that, maybe to socialise despite having a low mood?
My experience of depression and when I work with it, and this is a very kind of rudimentary description, so apologies if anyone's listening to this and that doesn't apply to me, but for me it just wanted me to be sedentary and to ruminate, and it did want me to avoid. So if you've got anxiety and depression, they're over, you know, they shake hands at avoidance. They're like, should we just get this person to avoid? And anxiety be like, yeah, avoid doing the thing because you don't like how it makes you feel. And depression's like, yeah, and I can keep you here and let the self-critic just go to town on you while you're sat here avoiding. And it'll tell you loads of things, like nihilistic things like you're pointless, things are pointless, you're a burden, what's the point? Things like, it was for me anyway, I had the voice of depression and anxiety for a fairly long time in my life. Getting out with depression is similar to anxiety in the sense that, listen, I'm going to teach the brain that it's wrong, you know? Depression says you're not capable, and anxiety says you're not going to cope. Well, okay, watch. And yes, it's going to feel like I've got lead boots on. And yes, I'm going to feel like I've got a gun to my head, but I'm going to do it, and I'll show you. And the brain goes, all right, okay, well, oh, look, empirical evidence. maybe I'll rewire myself. Yeah.
It's kind of like, and that rewiring is almost like, well, you've got those... you've got those tracks in the snow, isn't it? And you drop a new dump of snow on top and you can create those new tracks, but you've got to create that new dump of snow, you have to create that experience, I guess, in a way. And that's where you're kind of like, right, now I'm going to socialise despite how I feel. And I think it is important that we are careful, because sometimes what the brain, or a lot of the time what the brain's telling us, like, don't do this because of this, or you're too tired to do this, it's not actually helping you, is it? It's not telling you or giving you sound advice. It's kind of like that thing where, you know, you don't want to go to the gym and you're like, yeah, I mean, obviously I'm not talking about that you are tired, you need to rest, but
yeah,
in a sense that you're trying to be avoidant of it or whatever, and you're like, oh, no, I'm going to go, you go, and then you feel so much better having gone. Similarly with friends, maybe just to go and hang out and have a pizza with friends, you think, oh, yeah, do you know, I'm not going to go, and then you're like, oh, go on.
Well, even today, like, we've picked the world's worst weather day.
And it's a beautiful day, Josh.
I'm not going to lie.
Come on.
I turn up and be like, oh, what? I've got to trudge around Regent's Park like in this. Like, I've not got my wetsuit.
You weren't going to ghost me, were you?
No, absolutely not. But you know what? But then, you know what? Now we've been walking around for a bit, it feels lovely. you know, and we're wet. And
Charlie,
all that,
Charlie doesn't agree with you. I can tell you. Producer Charlie's face, as much as she would probably love to try and pretend, she's like, I don't agree with you today. Not today, people. What's the coldest part of you, Charlie?
My hands.
Her hands, you say.
My soul.
Goodness, my soul. Yeah. Okay, okay. Goodness. Well, hopefully we can warm you up with a hot chocolate afterwards, Charlie. Yeah. Flat white or something similar like that. We'll definitely feel good for it afterwards, I'm certain. And do you know what it is? The other thing is discomfort teaches you the comfort of comfort, right? The joy of comfort.
Yeah.
And when you push yourself into discomfort, when you come back to comfort, you really appreciate it. Actually, my friend has got a great saying, I appreciate this. Good, you know, you've got to be careful with this, not to take it into like a toxic element, but like earn your couch, like almost that thing of like, yeah. Earn the comfort of your couch by, like, you know, do something, you know, challenge yourself, and then, you know, when you sit down and you relax, you're like, oh,
the sofa feels nicer.
Yeah, the sofa feels more comfortable. Yeah. When you put your feet up and you watch the Netflix and chill, and you just know that you've done something. It might be something little that day or might be something big that day, but you kind of earned your couch, and you're like, I deserve this couch. I'm sitting on this couch and I'm going to really sit here for 3 hours, and I'm going to sit here for 3 hours because I've earned it.
Yeah, and as long as that goal was big for you, not conventional. Like, you know, it took a lot for me to just walk to the post office today, you know, particularly as there's only like 3 left and I have to walk 100 miles. But in general, it took a lot for me to do that today. And yeah, I'm going to enjoy that. I'm going to savor that I did more than what I thought I could do.
I think it's a good way to also feel a sense of pride, because like you said, sometimes with that kind of negative voice, whether it's relating to a state of anxiety, whether you're feeling a low mood, like remembering to kind of give yourself a pat on the back, right, and say like, you've done good today, like you've coped with this, or you've achieved this. And it is hard, because if you're someone that is kind of, again, quite a self-critic, I find that quite a lot, you can easily be very hard on yourself. Oh, I haven't done this, I haven't done that, or should have done this better. It's very quick to go to that stuff and not go to the stuff where you're like, oh, I actually did quite well there.
Oh yeah, like a negative debrief of your day. No, like you don't be like, I call it like the touchline dad thing. Don't get me wrong, there's lots of wonderful touchline dads cheering their children on. But like, play football, but
the stereotype.
The old stereotype, shouting, screaming, you should have done this better. Even though the kids scored a hat trick and, you know, doing Rabonas around the team.
Well, even if they haven't, they've turned up and they've played and done their best, right?
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, the critic always wants more. How could you have optimized yourself better? It's like, no. What did you do today? And what did you do today despite not feeling 100%? Oh, that's a good one. It's always a good one.
That is a good one, because often, you know, I've started noticing a little bit more about days that I feel that I feel really motivated today, really, like I can achieve, I can push or whatever. But then I'm actually trying to really notice days that I'm perhaps feeling at a lower ebb or just don't have the energy, and just learning to like listen to myself a bit on those days and to pull back a bit. Because otherwise, I think with that strong kind of critical voice, it's like, no, I'm going to push through, or like I need to lift my energy levels really high. But actually, probably what I needed was just to kind of just go at 70% that day and be like, that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine. And listening to yourself, so we spoke a lot about avoidance stuff like that, but actually trust your judgment in the sense that, and your volition in the sense that, you know what, I'm just pretty tired, I've had a lot on, so
yeah, there's a big difference.
I'm gonna stop,
we know the difference between going, you know, and what I mean by we is like you and yourself, you know, when you're too tired to go to the gym that day and when you're being avoidant. I'm just using the gym as an example, right? But like it could be a social thing of going to see your friends. You know when you're genuinely got a low social battery and you're knackered and you really do just need that kind of duvet chill.
Yeah.
And when you're being avoidant. And it's about trusting your gut and going, no, I am actually really knackered, fine.
That's
but
fine.
If you're avoiding the avoidance and you're actually, you know, deep down in your gut, because we always know in our gut, I'm actually being a bit avoidant here. Yeah. That's where you've got to drag, you've got to pick yourself up and go, come on, let's go.
Yeah, absolutely.
God, I think as we've come to the end, I'm not quite brave enough. Can I take the brolly off? I think I might actually. I think the brolly might be able to come down. It's actually towards the end of the podcast. Stopped raining. What a celebration that is. How nice is that?
Wouldn't have had it any other way.
You wouldn't, would you? Yeah, you wouldn't have done that. Good, we're by the fountain. It's a real full circle. Thank you, weather for providing true British fashion. are your hands freezing as well?
I can't feel them.
Can't feel them. Well, you know, there we go. It shows we're a podcast that we go out there and we bring you the conversation.
You stand by your principle. I don't care if it's a thunderstorm.
We are stomping. Actually, lightning is one of the few times we stop in it, Charlie. Lightning, we make an exception for lightning.
Waving
around. Mainly because I'm the one that's the tallest. We'll have the tallest umbrella and therefore be most at risk.
Your guest's like 10 feet away from you.
Charlie's fine. She's not 6'4". She won't get hit by lightning. I'm stood there like with this big battle.
Waving it around in the air. Yeah, that's asking for it.
No, I certainly not asking for it. So as we come towards the end of part three, then I guess you know we've talked about lots of different things around anxiety. Like, what is it? Some of the things that we can do to manage it. If you are listening and you're struggling with anxiety right now, I wonder, Josh, if you could just share just a few kind of tips, even just encouragement that things are going to be okay and what to do in the first basic principle. If they've not had a therapist, or maybe they've had some therapy, they feel a bit lost with it all, and they just feel that anxiety is getting a bit much, what advice can you give?
First piece of advice is just to know that this feeling can change. It's probably been there for a while. Your life probably feels a bit cyclical, a bit repetitive, and that can lead to feelings of hopelessness. I felt like that, many people have. But know that always the brain can change, the feeling doesn't always last forever. All emotions and feelings are transient, and sometimes when we're in a cycle, we've got to be the person to kind of step off that. Know that all that's happening is you've got adrenaline and cortisol pumping through, that's why you feel scared, it's probably why you have the weird symptoms, so those what-ifs feel really real. But just know that's just the lens. It's just the lens of fear. And when we take the lens off and understand that, actually, I don't really need to give these thoughts as much attention as I have been doing. And I don't have to be behaving like I have done, because this can all change. Knowing that you can be the person that empowers yourself to change it as well. For years, I always tried to find the fix or find the person that could help me and fix me. Don't get me wrong, I've had help and guidance, but when I found out, and I found this with other people who recover from anxiety long term, is that when they give themselves the credit and acknowledge that they are the tool to get better, they are the coping mechanism, by doing courageous, difficult, uncomfortable things and understanding about your mind and body, you've got this. If you listen to this, you've got this. You will get to a good place. Panic doesn't last forever. Those intrusive thoughts don't mean anything about you. They're often the opposite of who you are, no matter how weird and crazy they are. And yeah, there is hope. Lots of hope. You've got it. You've got this.
I love it. I absolutely love it. All I would say on top of that is, yeah, just remember, this too shall pass. It's one of my favorite sayings and quotes. But I have nothing else to add to what you just said, other than the fact that I'm putting my umbrella back up. Josh, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the Stompcast. Your book is available from the date that this goes out, which is great news, but I think it's the 14th of March, isn't it, you said?
14th of March. I'll just say, how does that make you feel? If you want to know what it's like to be the life behind the therapy room door of an anxiety therapist, Come join me.
Check it out. So, so from the date this podcast will be released, it will be available to us. And how does that make you feel? So please do check it out. It'll make you laugh. I don't think it'll make you cry, but it'll probably make you feel better.
It'll make you cry as well. It'll make you feel all the things.
As well. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. I hope you found the podcast helpful and useful and enjoyed it. We'll be doing our Behind the Stompcast as usual after finishing this recording. We're letting Josh go and warm up and things. We'll continue to freeze our hands off on Behind the Stompcast. So please do join us, have a listen. You can subscribe on a free trial on Apple Podcasts and take a listen. See you all very soon. Take care.
This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.